And I'm feeling all the feelings that I'm supposed to feel. I just don't like feeling them.
Everybody, we're Sorkin in it. Watching the newsroom, please take just a minute. It's a podcast. Aaron Sorkin might choose about Will and Mackenzie making the news. You're Sorkin in it.
Listen, you're ready and we're ready. It's Sorkin in it time. Brian, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Lex?
I am doing really well, and I like our subtle way of introducing each other.
Yep.
And today we're discussing season one, episode four of The Newsroom, I'll Try to Fix You.
Is that really the title of this episode? I'll Try to Fix You?
Yes.
Okay. And I believe it's up to me to provide a synopsis. IMDb, Wikipedia, everything kind of failed me, so I cobbled together just a few bullet points for us here. Does that work for you?
I'm ready. Buckle up.
So here's roughly what happens. Will has a series of confrontations with women, ending him up in the tabloids. Don sets up Jim with Maggie's roommate. And the Newsnight team covers a series of stories that they missed from the previous year, notably guns. We'll get into that. And Neil pitches his Bigfoot theory to pretty much anybody who will listen. The episode ends with coverage of the true story of Congresswoman Giffords' shooting. Does that sound about right to you, Lex? Is that the show you watched?
Great, great job. Great job. I love it. That is the show I watched. And let's dive in chronologically.
Okay.
I'm going to start with the episode title. I don't like it. So there's a Coldplay song whose lyric is, the title is called Fix You. The lyric is, I will try to fix you. And Sorkin even says in the post-show thing, like, oh yeah, this is a more casual version of that song lyric, I'll try to fix you. It feels like a mistake to me. I don't know. It feels like he's fixing
the
it.
The added syllables where we didn't need them.
But I thought that the episode opened with another great set of previouslys. I've been very impressed with the previouslys on The Newsroom on the show. I don't take those for granted, Brian. Maybe you do. I am still shocked at how bad the opening credits are, but the previous
I just skip them every time now. Sorry to the creative minds who put that one together, but once was enough.
I have now concluded that every major Sorkin hero smokes.
I was wondering about the smoking too. It was actually the first line of my notes. So I was thinking about it because Bartlett smokes sometimes,
right?
And it's usually more of like a plot point almost. He smokes if he's like super stressed or if he needs to go like suss out something he's trying to figure out. Will just like pops one in and he's got them all on his desk anytime he needs them. And I don't get it. I'm trying to figure out like, what is this trying to message? What message is this trying to send us that Will like super loves cigarettes?
I think that Aaron Sorkin loves cigarettes. I think that Aaron Sorkin thinks that smoking is cool. For real. I think that Sorkin thinks smoking is cool.
It does not look cool when he does it.
No.
Maybe it did 10 years ago, but I don't think so.
It doesn't work for me. I did like, just in that opening moments, the direction or writing or both of, we get first told that it's New Year's Eve by the website that Will is on, that he's looking at some website, probably the news network's website, saying, you know, here's how New York or whatever is getting ready to ring in New Year's Eve. I was like, that's a cute little way to do it with the news.
Yep.
My next note, Brian, is even Wade's name kind of makes him sound like a douche. I don't mean to insult anybody whose name is Wade. Maybe you do it better, but his Wade is not good.
Yeah. This Wade, he feels slimy from the moment we meet him.
And it's unfair that he's slimy, but he is slimy. Because I don't think, I think he's, I'm going to say he's more doofy than slimy, but he is both.
Yeah, yeah.
He's both doofy and slimy.
Yeah, we met him in the last episode, right? Or maybe it was the one before.
Correct.
But he felt like he was a prop for Mac. And now he's coming in trying to get something out of the deal. And we're not meant to like him, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's right. So I guess I have so many notes. I took more notes on this episode than any other episode.
I have a question for you as we get into your notes.
Yeah.
Did you ever have a company that you worked for that regularly had New Year's Eve parties?
Hey, great question. No.
Then again, I never had a company that like was on Times Square or something too. So maybe there's something to that.
Right. On Times Square. And like there is, I guess, some level of news coverage on a New Year's Eve. But not that Will would be doing. That'd be like the entertainment. I guess Anderson Cooper does CNN's, but he didn't at that time. So yeah, you're right. That is a little bit odd. It's odd that they were together.
I was...
These people don't have friends. Their friends are all their coworkers and roommates.
I worked at a local retailer here in the Northwest called Amazon. And many of our buildings were within sight of places that were excellent to celebrate holidays. Like... Lake Union would have big firework festivals going on there, and I could like see planes landing on Lake Union the whole time I was working there. And then down by the Space Needle. They'd have a big fireworks display there. Like, anytime those things were coming up, they had signs all over the building, like, no parties, you're not allowed in the building any times around here. So maybe the higher-ups had events, I don't know, but you know, nobody was celebrating any holidays in our buildings.
We did, Brian, because I also worked at Amazon. But you know, it's funny. When I had offices in Times Square, people did talk about using them for watching fireworks or parades.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we had a view of the ball dropping at that office, but I never did it because the traffic in and out would have been horrible. But how do you feel about this Bigfoot plotline?
It was dumb. I feel like Neil is supposed to be like super smart, and he does bring us some pretty intelligent info throughout the season so far. This Bigfoot thing, it didn't really bother me too much because I did actually think it was pretty funny the way he kept trying to pull it off. It just doesn't seem to really serve his character super well.
Agreed on all counts. I did think that there's an aspect of Sorkin's talent that came up. Neil is just starting to talk to Maggie and about this big topic, and before he can get anywhere, she says, "Is this Bigfoot?" Showing she already knows. And yep. What that's doing is referencing the history. Like, there's so much more of these characters' lives that we don't see or haven't seen or will never see because they existed before we started seeing the show and they exist when they're not on camera. And obviously that's true in every TV show, unless it's set fully in real time, but from birth. But I really feel like Sorkin does a great job of driving that home, of like, yep, she already knows because she already has history. And I like that. So I noted it.
Mm-hmm.
By the same token, in my next breath was like, Sloane and Will have what I would consider unearned rapport early in this episode. Or there's a lot of history we didn't see. Because when they're chatting at the party, the last we knew, he was unimpressed by her hiring. And I guess many months have gone by from the previous episode.
Sure.
And so they developed a rapport, but I felt grumpy that I didn't get to see that rapport happen because she was very familiar with him while she's encouraging him to go talk to the lady.
And yeah,
like, man, when did they get that rapport? When did that rapport happen, Brian?
We see them, I think it's actually later in this particular episode, we see them at the news desk together doing news on camera, right, and stuff, passing back and forth. And so, like, it almost feels if we had seen even a scene of that or two before this extra rapport that they are having during the party, that might have given us a little bit more of the casual familiarity that they had.
And then she encourages him to go talk to, I forget the character's name, but she's
Nina?
Played by Hope Davis. Is that right? Nina?
Yeah.
Nina, another recycled Sorkin name.
Yeah.
That's one of President Bartlett's kids. And I did think, listen, as we've discussed, I think as recently as last week, Sorkin wrestles with some stuff is real and some stuff is not. And Fox News and News Corp exist in this show, and CNN mm-hmm. exists, but they clearly didn't want to reference TMZ by name for some reason.
Yeah.
And their version is TMI, and I thought that was a really funny way to parody
TMZ.
That is pretty cute. Yeah. So I enjoyed that. I did not like Will's line, "I don't care if she's writing for Mein Kampf." I thought that was a bad line. When they're saying, "You don't want to talk to her. She writes for TMI. I don't care if she's writing." There's so many better punchlines that I feel like are a little bit less loaded. And I feel like Will would not be that cavalier with like, "Yeah, I don't care if she's Hitler." Feels like extreme to me.
So how did you feel about their particular, is this maybe the longest conversation we've seen him have with another woman who isn't Mac?
We get to see his version of game, let's call it. And I love the Sorkinism. And I think I don't know if it came from Sorkin for me in my own dialogue or if it's just that I'm myself a Sorkin character, but he often has his smart characters think in lists and speak in lists that they make up on the spot. And she, you know, she says something about like, "Well, didn't you do this on your show too? Like, aren't you also doing hit pieces on Tea Party People?" And he's like, "Well, first, thanks for watching. Second,
like
it didn't
that.
Work. They won. third, four." And I love like a random start to a list in the middle of a conversation. And so I enjoyed that aspect. But obviously Will gets very unlikable very fast. He could have had the same conversation with the same intent without being as much of a prick. And he went full prick mode.
Yeah. I initially thought like, surely he knows what a takedown piece is. And so that kind of beggared belief, to use a term that you use a lot, beggared belief for me. Then I watched the behind the scenes later thing, and Sorkin mentions that he had a very similar interaction
where he learned what a hit piece was.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess everybody learns about that at some point. But then again,
Sorkin assumes if he doesn't know about a thing, oh, my smart characters can't know about it. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, he did turn into a prick really quick. And that creates the whole framing device, I guess, for all the other interactions he has with other people throughout this episode. It just didn't. I suppose we're supposed to be learning a little bit about Will in this, that he just cannot stand this kind of way of thinking about the world and a way of approaching the world. The idea that he's going to go try to fix these people, it's a crusade that he's just not going to win.
Right. And it's supposed to show his idealism so he can be a jerk because his intentions are good. And like, I think you're supposed to not appreciate his jerkiness. Like, I think you're supposed to judge him for it, which we do.
Mm-hmm.
But it makes him seem stupid to me. He has some funny lines. He's like, I'm not putting you down. I'm just saying, like, you suck. Like, what you do is terrible. Or else. Like, I thought that was funny. But being dumb enough to offend a gossip writer makes him look stupid. Like, he should know what's going to happen. Obviously, we do. And it's being telegraphed to us as TV watchers. But he doesn't get it. Then, even this was just the first splash. The first time he has wine splashed. I'm like, people don't really do that, do they? Like, mm-hmm. I feel like I only see that in TV and movies. That's not a thing that real humans do.
No.
It doesn't reflect well on either of them. And then Will is pissed after the interaction, which would make sense to me. But then they also, there's a moment of him being sad after that interaction, which I did not understand. It did not Mm-mm. feel earned. Like, there's Mm-mm. some quiet reflection where he's looking all pensive and solemn. That didn't work for me. But then we smash cut to, it probably wasn't a smash cut, stuff that really worked for me. Charlie, this Charlie, is an all-time great Sorkin character. We've talked about it every time, but God, he's so good. His first scene is so good. In this episode, and he has a lot of stuff where he's just in one room in this. I don't know. I love everything he does. Anytime he's on screen, I'm happy.
Yeah, I love Charlie too. I mean, we kind of assumed we would, just because we both love that actor so much, and that he seemed to be playing a character that was really well suited to his personality.
But so different from his Law and Order character to me.
Yeah, it's great. This show would have a lot less heart if he wasn't in it.
I'm not going to say beggar belief, but I'm going to say defies belief. The whole crew of the show splashing Will with water, that defied belief to me. I cannot imagine for a second that you would go to your main flagship talent and the whole crew would feel comfortable splashing him with water. Like, no way.
Everything we know about Will, like that he would just like take it and laugh with that idea.
The parade of things that are sucky that Will says and does, his response to getting splashed in the face. Do you remember what he says? Can I say in my defense,
did you see her legs? Yeah. And I'm trying to remember, like, I'm not going to go back and look. Did we see her legs, like, as viewers? Like,
I don't even know. But it's like,
that's the point, I guess.
He's got to not, like, it's just, I mean, I don't think anybody would say that in 2023. And I don't think people said it a decade ago either. I get that, like, talent can kind of get away with whatever they want, but they also can't. Like, it seemed really, like, That's a line that maybe you could say to your best friend, but it felt very weird to me in a workplace setting.
Yeah.
I didn't like it. Nor did I like that we were talking about missed stories, and one of them was a conflict of interest with Virginia Ginny Thomas 10 freaking years ago, when it's thing now in 2023.
I did not catch that. Wow.
Yeah. They called her Virginia Thomas, which nobody does anymore. Everybody calls her Ginny Thomas, but that's Clarence Thomas's wife. I did not love a moment that then came up where they're counting down to do just a regular broadcast of the show within the show, and then we have an immediate transition to now it's the end of the show. Like, it's like, we're not going to bother showing you this one. It felt very weird to me. Like, just show the end of the show then. Don't show us the start. It felt too TV-ish.
I don't like it when they do that. I did notice that they clap after broadcasts, and we brought that up in the first episode, and we're like, oh, were they all clapping because he did something really remarkable? Maybe they just clap after every broadcast.
Right. Good show. And we should start doing that for ourselves when we finish.
Right,
when we stop recording.
We do clap when we start.
We do. And so, listeners, even if you don't hear us clapping at the end, we did. So let's get to the next plot line. What did you think of the Jim and Maggie, Maggie's roommate situation?
Okay. My first line here is, I hate Don. Don is not winning us over here. He is such a stinker, and it's so apparent to us, the viewer, what he's trying to do here. But there's a couple parts of it that I really don't like, is that he comes in with this idea. He asks Maggie what she thinks of the idea of fixing up Jim with the roommate. And then She says, no, terrible idea. Let's not do it. And he says, it'll be great. It'll be great. It'll be great. And I really don't like that as like a way to move forward with a plot. I suppose that does happen when people talk and they just don't listen to each other. But it's not a great... It makes Maggie feel really powerless or come across as very powerless in their relationship, which perhaps she is. But it makes me uncomfortable. And it also just makes me feel like this just whole thing is super cheap. How did you feel about it?
I thought that everything about what the storyline would be was telegraphed and transparent.
Yeah.
But that it was still beautifully executed. Like, I don't have actual complaints about it. Like, the roommate's name is Lisa. The actress is Kellen Coleman. Like, Helen with a K.
She was cool.
I thought she was cool. I thought she did a good job with that role. I thought that the way that Sorkin writes it and handles it was good. I thought, like, we knew what was going on. We knew why Don wanted to set her up. We knew Maggie didn't like it. I thought it was surprising just how transparent Maggie was, but they called it out. Like,
yeah.
I really thought that that Jim had some great moments at the end where he's like, you know exactly what I'm talking about, and if you don't, Don does. Mm-hmm. Like, and mm-hmm. pointing out, look who made the call and who wanted to set me up in the first place. I don't like Jim lying about it. I don't mind the writing of Jim lying about it, but I'm mad at Jim for lying about it. I understand what he did, but it's Lex Friedman's advice. It's never the right call to lie, even if it's to protect someone's feelings. Like, it doesn't work. But we'll get to it as we get closer to the end of the episode. There was some stuff that I didn't like about how it happens, but we needed Jim to point out that Don sucks, which you kind of want Maggie to get to on her own. But I've also probably been in, and certainly known people to be in, bad relationships where they don't realize it. Right? You get too blinded by whatever else. But so it's funny. I wrestled with it as a plot point because it felt not contrived, but it felt basic.
Mm.
And then I thought he really did a great job with it. But I did call it very early on when we heard Chekhov's ringtone.
I think what I'm realizing here is I'm played right into Aaron Sorkin's hands here, and I'm feeling all the feelings that I'm supposed to feel. I just don't like feeling them.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I will say one question I have about it, and I'm curious your thoughts, is Don's pretty open-faced about what's going on here. Like, I don't think he thinks it's really going to work out between Lisa and Jim. And so is he just kind of like trying to show Maggie that he realizes that she has feelings for Jim? Like,
it's a great question.
Is there something there? Is he like kind of accelerating the timeline of their relationship, or he's like, look, we need to have, like, this is kind of some underhanded way of having an ultimatum? I don't know.
My read on it is, and I do think it's a little ambiguous, at least thus far, but my read on it is Don knows Jim is likable and handsome. Mm-hmm. And he knows that Maggie knows that Jim is likable and handsome. And he wants to cool off Jim's potential interest in Maggie and Maggie's potential interest in Jim. So this serves both things.
Take him off the market.
Like, he's off the market because he's with your roommate. And you can be, you know, you can like him less now, too. Like, you cannot worry about him.
I mean, she did fall in love with her coworker, Don.
Right.
And now Don's not her coworker anymore, like, directly. And now she's put with someone who's even more likable than Don. That's got to be a little bit tough for Don.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you're right, though. Aaron wants you to feel all the ways you're feeling about Don. And I don't know. It's here are the things that I didn't like that follow this beat in the story. A couple of them. First, Charlie calls Will in on a Saturday without any context. And I don't feel like Charlie would ever do that from what I know of Charlie or from what I know of talent relations. Like,
yeah.
He gives him nothing, which is weird. I don't like Maggie being this unprofessional about Jim dating her roommate. Jim lying about it is also weird, but like Maggie making a scene in the office is not good. I did enjoy the line, excuse me, this isn't soundproof glass, when they had just gone outside that one conference room. That was very funny. Also, dumb office design.
I had the note that, like, why do people go into the bullpen area to yell at each other? Like, that's where more people are.
Yes, it happens a couple different times. Yes. But yeah, and then Maggie needed Jim to point out that Don sucks. But then we get the line, you think, which is another classic Sorkinism. We get some of those. Then at some point, is it Will who said that? No, it's Charlie accuses Will of having clay feet. And I don't know what that means. And later it becomes a tag later, a button later, where he's like, cement feet or something like that. But like, yeah. I had no idea what the hell clay feet was supposed to mean. That was lost on me. I have the same note as you. Like, Will and McKenzie going into the bullpen to fight is weird. For a moment, I enjoyed some of these looks between Maggie and Jim, right? He yells at Maggie. He's like, I'm your boss. Stop being unprofessional in the office. And you have to come work this boring thing. But then Gabby Giffords gets shot. And he sees Maggie getting worked up. And then they're sharing some moments because, hey, we're working on this big story because this congressman. Like, it's this, not as the same, but the same. It occupies the same uncomfortable place for me as last time when Will wants to compare a 9/11 apology for, hey, I'm sorry that we didn't protect you, to his apology, I'm sorry we didn't do a better job with the news. And now, like, we're having some romantic or at least friendship moments bonding over this horrible news mm-hmm. story. And I didn't like it. And I also thought it was very weird, by the way, that the Weekend Entertainment Show uses the ACN Nightly News set. Like, the fact that they had to clear them off, that seemed dumb and not believable to me. But it's, again, and Sorkin talked about it in the post show. He's giving himself a problem he doesn't have to. Making ACN be better than all real news networks were in not calling and waiting to announce her death. Obviously, the right call, right? Don't announce that she's dead until she is. But saying, you know, CNN saying NPR is reporting that Gabby Giffords is dead is at least reasonable to me. NPR got it wrong. I'm sure NPR apologizes in the real world. But letting them have the advantage of waiting because it serves a story, like, don't make journalists hate your show. And that's what that does to me. Like, they got it better because they could have it in retrospect. I think that's, I didn't like that. But then we have Don getting a hero moment for the, I feel like, the second episode in a row where, what's his name is Chris Messina Reese is yelling at, like, come on, call it. People are going to flip away to other channels. And first of all, I also think that Will could again say, we're not prepared to report this. We don't know whether it's true or not. Some of our competitors are saying this. Like, it seems to me like that's right there for the taking.
Yeah.
But then we get Don saying, it's a person. Like, get the fuck out of here. Like, I don't want to get that from Don. I don't need that from Don. That's not who Don is. So here's what happens for me. And I was even reading some other people's reviews of this episode after I had written all my notes. It's this great emotional moment. And now we've got Jim and Maggie sharing smiles. We've got Will fired up and pumped up because he correctly waited and knows that the congressman was merely shot in the face and didn't die. And I found, like, yeah, we're doing it. We're covering the story. I found all the celebration and romance of it all distasteful. It really upset me, while also thinking it was really well done. Like, it was really emotional. I was invested in it. It was poignant, but I hated it. I hated it for reasons they didn't want me to hate it, but I also felt that it was working, and I hated that too. And I really didn't like that while we're on a commercial break, which I don't think they would do during a breaking news story like that anyway, but while they're on a break for a second, Neil uses that moment to start pitching Will on Bigfoot some more. Like, not on Gabby Gifford's shot
down. That was dumb.
That really bothered me. So, but I'm curious, how did you feel about this? Because, like, I texted you without specific context, because, like, I really wanted to talk about this because it worked. I thought it worked as a dramatic device, and I really didn't like it at the same time. But I liked it as a fan, and I didn't like it as a human. Like, I don't know. I really struggled with that final act.
Yeah, I remember this. This is one of the few stories that I remember from 10 years ago. Like, I knew it was coming. I didn't know if it was season one or season three. But I do remember them deciding not to report that she was dead. And I even remembered, like, that title, like, the some producer or something made the little title screen with, like, her 2011 death date.
Right.
And I remember them being like, get that off of there. Don't show that. And so when this whole episode was going and then they mentioned Gabby Gifford had gotten shot, I was like, oh geez, how much longer is this episode? Cause I had stretched that into, like, an entire episode in my memory. But, and then I looked and it's like 9 minutes left. I'm like, wow, they're really going to cram all this at the end. And then it started to feel a lot like episode one, but it's starting to feel a little bit like a crutch, I guess, or like just, well, let's just tag in one specific event right here at the end of the episode. So we get to see people running around carrying cell phones and having, like, a phone to each ear. And it does feel a little bit just like we need some news thing to squeeze in. And is it going to be like the news event of the week for us from here on out? Or are we only going to have this kind of pop up here and there? It feels a little bit like it's going to be the news thing of the week. And so I'm a little nervous that it's just going to end up doing that to us.
And I feel like you can start predicting what they'll be because Aaron Sorkin was just looking at the calendar and seeing what was coming next.
Yeah.
Obviously, the show was written after all these events had happened, but he didn't predict them. But I didn't object to them using that story. I didn't object to it being crammed in there, like, because it felt like that's how the news happens, right? They didn't know, they couldn't plan, and then there it was. I really struggled with how much joy we're taking in reporting on something so horrible. I wanted to see a little bit more upsettedness. Like, they have a job to do, and they can be proud of the job they're doing, but, like, it doesn't feel like it's the time for cheerleading. Boy, we really are crushing this story about, like, I remember how upset I was when this event happened.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
it was bad. And so, I don't know. I want a little more that it is bad from them.
I hear you. Like, if they had been more solemn about it and, like, hey, everybody take a moment here. This is, we all have to do our jobs, but I know that you're probably all a little bit shook. That kind of stuff, if there had been a little bit of that and a little bit less Bigfoot, we probably would have, it might sat a little better.
Right. And a little bit less, like, they were all just screaming in joy at each other. Yeah, we waited and now she is alive, maybe. Like, we also still didn't know what she's going to survive.
She's in surgery. Like, she got shot in the head and now she's in surgery. Let's all just sit tight a bit.
Yeah. And I do not consider that a story with a happy ending. Like, I'm glad that she survived, but she, I would imagine, still struggles to this day. But anyway, I don't know. I liked the episode and I was mad at it. But we didn't, you mentioned at the top the whole guns subplot and we haven't dived into it. So do you want to talk about the guns a bit? I did note again, we had some surprisingly, I mean, famous then, but more famous now, guest stars, including Natalie Morales, who was criminally underused as Neil's girlfriend. And then he goes on a date with Catherine Hahn. Yeah.
Yeah. That was...
Gun-toting Catherine Hahn.
I loved her in this episode. Also, like, super underused because she just chews up whatever scene she's in. And she... they make it up to her to his apartment, and I'm like, oh, this is actually a pretty good match for Will. She's talking about getting a joint for them to smoke and stuff. I'm like, yeah, I could see all this working for the two of them. And then he finds the gun in her purse. I enjoyed that. I thought that was actually a pretty reasonable plot point for them. It was a little weird, like how expertly he handled the gun and then pointed at her face. I did not like that part, but pretty much every other part
was pretty
good. He
pointed it at her face when he had disarmed it, though, right?
Oh, like, yeah, totally. Like, it was not dangerous.
So it didn't bother me exactly. It felt like part of their flirtation. She's a woman who carries a gun. She talked about carrying a gun. She acknowledged being turned on by his quick disarming of the gun. And then we haven't even gone deep on the fact that all this reporting is happening and these tabloids are talking about him and following him everywhere because it's coming from the very top. It's coming from Jane Fonda and friends.
Yeah.
Which is like bonkers to me. They'd rather not have the scandal, right? Like it seems like there's easier ways to deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah. You kind of are expecting or hoping that that'll blow back up in Jane Fonda's face. I have no idea if it does. I couldn't, I barely remember it at all.
The gun?
No, Lex. The story.
No, yeah.
Yeah. And I think, like, I also expected with him going out against the gun lobby that there would be more, like, more threats to him physically rather than, like, just in the tabloids or something. And so I kind of, I was expecting something like that to happen. And then we had the parallel with Gabby Gifford's shooting. And so, like, there was a couple degrees of separation of connection there or just, like, pure serendipity.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I really, like I said, I think this was a good episode of television. I think it was a good episode of The Newsroom. I struggled with the joy in the Gifford story. And then some people love the song Fix You, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the story behind that song Fix You, which underscores the Gabby Giffords scene for a very long time. The story of that song is Gwyneth Paltrow, who was Chris Martin, the lead singer and songwriter for Coldplay, they were married at the time and her father had died and he wrote this song for her. And it was about her. Gwyneth says it was about him trying to put me back together after my dad died. I think it's pretty nice. I think the
pretty
word
nice.
Choice is poor in the song. Fix you implies that you are broken. And there's some, to me, I was Googling like, do people think that song is misogynistic? And there are definitely people who are conflicted about that song, but mostly it's thought to be this beautiful, lovely song.
Mm-hmm.
I have beef with it because I think it sounds shitty. I think he sounds like a jerk. I will try to fix it.
I don't want
like
someone else fixing me.
Right. I'll try to help you. I'll try to be there for you.
I'll try to fix you up with your roommate. See, that's I wonder if there was a little bit of a stretch of like...
Right.
I don't think Don or Maggie or Jim or anybody there is fixing anybody else. And so
wonder... I think that Will is trying to fix everything. Like, Will is trying to fix the news. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you're right. The rest of it isn't really fixing. I don't know. So I have some beef. The song is great melodically. Like it's really well written and it's got some cool chord progressions, whatever. But I have beef with that song totally separate from Sorkin. So it became a big thing for me in this episode.
Yeah.
Knowing it was coming and that's what the episode was named after. But I don't know. I really, like I said, I struggle with my rating on this one because I definitely liked it. I liked this episode, but I was still mad at it.
Yeah, I was kind of all over the place on it because some of the relationship stuff I didn't enjoy very much. The Will being a jerk to these women, I did not like. I feel like I, in retrospect, fully appreciate what all happened with Jim and Maggie and Don and everybody. I didn't enjoy it, but I think I wasn't supposed to.
Right.
And when that song started playing at the end, when the shootings happened, that it is where I got kind of like pulled out of the episode because I was like looking at the clock. I'm like, okay, but we're playing a song that's probably going to like wrap up this show. Like I was starting to think like, is the next, is something else going to happen after this? But they just kind of stretched it out through the end. And so I was just kind of like metagaming the rest of the episode. And it did kind of pull me out of the hubbub of what was happening in the newsroom. And so that did feel manipulative, I guess, because a lot of times when they play songs like that at the end of episodes, it does feel like some heartfelt moments or something is happening. And I felt like I was being pulled a little bit too hard at my heartstrings or something. And I was a little bummed about that.
Yeah.
I like the episode, though. Like, looking back, because you did text me, you're like, oh, boy, I can't wait to talk about this. And I'm like, ha, huh, okay, is it because he hated it or not? And so I'm like also trying to think through what you were feeling.
It's some of each, I think.
It's good. Yeah, that's the thing. It did take me on a ride.
And like I'm really wrestling with it even as we're talking about it. Like, why do I care so much? Like, I'm not Gabby Giffords, and the story is a long time ago, and we do know how it ends. But like, I just – and maybe – I don't think this is the case, but if I wanted to like overly read into it, you could say, you know, maybe – Sorkin isn't defending this behavior. He's just simply saying this is what they would do.
Yeah.
But it felt like it felt to me like Sorkin was saying, no, they've earned this celebratory moment. Like, this is a way, like, they're going to fight and they're going to come together when they cover the news, and that's how they're going to heal all their wounds. But like, Will's like fist bump in the air and like cheering, and Charlie's, yeah, you way to go, cement feet or whatever the hell it is. Mm-hmm. Like, it just felt like too much. And maybe I'm taking it too sensitively, but I didn't love it.
No, I mean, but you're totally right that the story wasn't over. They all went and had to report the rest of the news. And it did feel like, I don't know, celebrating at halftime or something. And then like getting the Gatorade dunked on you, you know, it's like, but we still have the rest of the game to play here. And yeah, the Bigfoot thing too. It's just, that was just dumb.
By the way, Bigfoot is not real. Neil is wrong. Again, I wanted to know what was going to happen next. I wanted to see next week's episode.
Yeah,
so it's doing something right. Next week's episode, by the way, is called Amen.
Is that also a song?
Probably.
Probably.
And it takes place the week of 2011's Valentine's Day.
So, okay. So what, like 5 weeks after this one that we just watched?
Thereabouts. That's right. Well, Brian, I enjoyed it. I'm glad to watch it with you and even more importantly, to discuss it with you. But I don't know what to do until next time. Do you have any advice?
You know, let me think through. I'm going to look through my notes here. It does say we should Sorkin in it, or keep Sorking in it for the next week. So if you could do that, that'd be great.
I'm willing. And don't forget to check out theincomparable.com/members if you want to support The Incomparable, our home, or divert some of your hard-earned cash to this very show. Brian still has to pay back his Logic Pro purchase, so help him out.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
This is also, this will drop pretty near to the Incomparable membership drive. So get ready. We really want you to become members. Do that for us.
Well, Lex and I, we're dreaming up what we could possibly do for our members during that time. So should be fun.
We have ideas. Thanks, everybody.